unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad compass. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
The Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. There's a story in the really excellent collection of stories in a little book called Zen Flesh, Zen Bones, of a master who asked a disciple who's sitting in meditation, "What are you doing? And why are you doing that?" And the disciple says, "I'm trying to become a Buddha. Doing this to become a Buddha." Later on, the disciple ran into the master somewhere, and the master was rubbing a brick. The disciple asked, "What are you doing?" And the master said, "I'm polishing this brick so it can become a mirror. Turn it into a mirror." How can you turn a brick into a mirror no matter how much polishing you do? If we go back to yesterday's talk, you'd say, how can you make a tiger into a Buddha? How can you make a knot of longing and despair, pain and confusion into a Buddha? It's all the same question. And the answer is, there is simply no way you can do that. I said that when the tiger disappeared, then the child of the Lord could be seen. Did the tiger turn into the child of the Lord? Did the despair and longing, pain and confusion turn into something else? One can answer that question at different levels, but at the deepest level the answer is no, it didn't. And yet it wasn't extinguished. You can't make a brick into a mirror by rubbing on the brick, no matter how much you rub. However much you train, however hard you train, you can't make what you think of as you into a Buddha. this would seem to open up that gap between something in the world, something that exists in some form or other, and the eternal. And this is exactly the way self perceives things. But there's a simple solution to the problem. And it's a solution that is a real solution. It's not some kind of clever dodge. It's not some kind of clever Zen game we're playing here. This is something one can prove for oneself over and over again to be literally the truth. You can't turn yourself into a Buddha because you already are Buddha. You can't make the tiger into the child of the Lord because the child of the Lord is what the tiger always was. In reality. Despair and fear and grief and longing won't just extinguish. Nor are they converted in a way in which there's a kind of total change of their spiritual substance, so to speak. It's just that all that was knotted up and twisted back, turned back on itself in confusion, is allowed to straighten out and relax. And then what it really was all along is revealed. This is the fundamental principle of Buddhist training. That all is already Buddha. That even our failure to recognize this at times is itself Buddha. That which people call evil is Buddha. That the worst things that people can do is Buddha. Even though in doing them, it makes it very hard for people themselves and others to recognize Buddha. In the events, in the actions, in their consequences. But the great turning point in a person's spiritual life really comes when they focus inwards and determine to take everything as being Buddha, whether they like it or not. One can meditate for years and decades and do all the forms of training, and without this decision, there's always something missing. This is a decision that her master made very early in her training. She said, I either have to take everything as being for my good, or I will go mad in this place. That was when she was a new monk, the only female monk, and a foreign female at that, training in a monastery of a couple hundred men. This is the same attitude with which she went into her great retreat in 1976. And this is the premise of how to grow lotus blossom. This is the premise of the practice of meditation, in actual fact. When we say, you know, don't hold on to the thoughts, the feelings, don't push them away, don't hold on to the experience of the senses, don't push it away, allow things to arise and pass, sit still within that flow. So what is the meaning of that spiritually? Is that just a psychological practice aimed at producing a kind of impassivity in the presence of, in the midst of experience? If one takes that approach and tries to practice meditation on the basis of that level of teaching, things are not going to go very far. That's all there is to it. Because that doesn't ask much in the way of faith. No, it's that this grief that's arising, this is Buddha. I do not push it away because it is not helping me or anyone else for me to push away the Buddha. This joy that is arising, this is Buddha. It does not help me or anyone else if I grasp after it. It is not for me to try to grasp after and hold on to Buddha, to control Buddha. My job is to sit still with a reverential heart. Inwardly bow to that which arises and that which passes. And if I do this truly, and if I apply it in my daily life through the practice of the precepts in the midst of daily activity, by putting the teaching of the precepts and the true spirit of the precepts into practice, then all that arises is the Buddha, and all that happens is the Buddha who is helping and teaching me. Even if sometimes it is something that I find very painful and difficult. And sometimes especially those times. There are still things that is good for me to do. Following this teaching doesn't turn me into some kind of spiritual idiot who just sits by and doesn't do the things that need to be done. Those things that need to be done are beckoning to me. That's the Buddha calling me. If it is good to do, then why not do it? If it is not good to do, then why do it? And it is this aspect of volition, the fact that we choose, that we have the capacity to choose, that it's itself a Buddha that helps us learn to turn towards and listen to and follow our own heart. And the Buddha that is karmic consequence constantly is showing us what happens when we don't get it right and what happens when we get it right. And the Buddha of not getting it right opens us up to us the teaching and the opportunity to get it right next time around. And the Buddha of getting it right opens up to us the teaching and the opportunity provided by the encouragement of seeing what works and experiencing its consequences. If you read How to Go to Lotus Blossom, you see that there's nothing in it about getting other people to be different than they are, or about getting the world to be different than it is. It's a book tells a story of a woman a great crisis in her life and a great spiritual opportunity in her life, giving herself fully and wholeheartedly to recognition and acceptance of the Buddhahood, of every aspect of that unscrolling experience. How is our deepest spiritual need going to be able to arise within us if we have not got to the point where we allow our instinctive our instinctive reaction, the Buddha nature reaction of compassion, sympathy, understanding, empathy, tenderness, generosity of spirit, to flow forth when that need comes up. We have to train in such a way that we lay a foundation of all acceptance. So that the Eternal can get at that need. And give it the help that it so longs for. I so often, as a priest, get questions about how people can do things in their work and in their family life to negotiate the thorny and often very painful aspects of human relationships. Our focus, this is what I always end up telling people one way or another, if our focus is on trying to get other people to be different than they are, we're only going to make things worse for ourselves and for them. If our focus is on our own training and we trust others to do their own training, even if it is in a style, in a way, seems to put them on a path of self-destruction. We help both ourselves and them. Without necessarily trying to help anyone. As a priest and a teacher, I have had plenty of opportunities to do little experiments in getting other people to change. I would like to share with you the benefit of my many years of experience. I'd like to say, and I say it without great pride, but you know, you can make what you will of it, that I have been all along 100% unsuccessful at that effort whenever I've done it. And it is so tempting. It is so tempting. One loves people, one wants to do the best for them. Why can't they just cooperate, for crying out loud, and get with the program? Why do people have to be so difficult? Can't I help them be less difficult? And that's coming from someone who's been labeled by some people as a very difficult person, by the way. No, it just, I approve for myself, it just does not work. If people change, it's not because of me, it's because of themselves. If I change, it's not because of them, it's because of myself. Someone may point the way for me. I'm very grateful for it. But I have to walk the way they point. It's the right way. And I'm the one who gets the consequences. And this is true for everyone else. We are not God. We are not Kanzeon. We are not Jesus. We are not the Virgin Mary. We are ourselves. And there is nothing in us or in anyone else that is not of the Buddha. The Eternal does not punish. The Eternal does not reward. The Eternal waits and waits. And when all conditions ripen and there is a true readiness and a true longing for the help, well, that help that was really always there simply is there. Following this teaching does not make you passive and callous. If I'm standing on the street corner and someone next to me jumps a gun and walks out in front of a bus and I'm able to just reach out and pull them back, well, of course I'll do so. I'm not going to sit there saying, it was my training to stand on the street corner when the light goes and it's safe, I'll cross the crosswalk. It's your training, you know, to jump the gun and get run over by the bus. I get the consequences of my actions, you get the consequences of your actions. No, my instinctive reaction, that of any normal person, is just to reach out, grab that person, and pull them back. That too is Buddha. It's not playing God. It's not trying to be Kanzeon. It's not clever. It didn't go cycling through my head first. It's just a natural, decent thing to do. How do we know the difference between what is truly good to do and what is a well-intentioned, daft thing to do? Read River Master's commentary on the precepts. Take it into your heart. Read it again and again. It shows you how to do it. It shows you how to live. It is that simple. It shows you how to get it right. Do nothing whatsoever on the spur of the moment. Ask the Lord of the house. Sit with it. Cook it. Offer up the blocks, the pain, the longing, the urges. Wait patiently. Listen. Wait for the still, small voice. Don't mistake the voice of passion for that still, small voice. Don't jump the gun. Then when the green light goes, go with confidence and faith and courage. It's all right there. It's not beyond any of us to do it, because we all have the Buddha nature.